Welcome back to Right Side Radio here on News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. This is Yaffe filling in for Phil Williams. Congrats to Phil and his wife celebrating their 35-year anniversary. Joining me on the phone right now, candidate for Congress, also former Assistant Secretary to the Army under President Trump, Casey Wardinsky. Casey, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Hey, it's great to be here, Yaffe.
So I really wanted to bring you on because the National Defense Authorization Act. Now, originally, when Congress passed that in the House and it moved to the Senate, Mo Brooks voted no. And I remember I asked you about it, and you said you would have voted no as well because of all the problems in it. Have you had a chance to look at it since it's been cleaned up in the Senate at all?
It's getting better. The conference committee, I think, in the work in the Senate, got rid of some of the items that were pretty worrisome. One was the transfer of the D.C. Guard to the mayor of D.C., which should never happen. Another thing was this creation of an office of extremism under the Undersecretary of Defense. That was a terrible idea. So they've gotten those out of there, but it's still got a lot of trouble in it.
Really?
You know, it's a big bill, and when you talk to a lot of people, they say, well, the troops need a pay raise. That's the appropriation, and this bill authorizes that appropriation be expended, but it authorizes a whole slew of things that would be surprising to people. For example, it talks about two new protected classes of individuals based on gender identity, and the other one based on sexual preference. Those seem like odd things to be in a defense bill to me, and it's a little bit of the getting the camel's nose under the tent. You do it in the military, and you work out the kinks, and then you move it right into the whole country, and you make those protected classes, along with the existing protected classes in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And then I think that's a real threat to churches and religious organizations, because it's a way to get at them through the sexual preference and gender identity business.
Interesting. So they snuck that. How would that work in the military, exactly, if they did that?
Well, you know, the military has a lot of civilian employees, so it would affect them almost immediately. And obviously for the uniformed personnel, it would affect them as well. And so there's a presumption when you're a protected class that kind of weighs in your favor that adverse personnel actions were some way based on your protected status. And so it puts an extra burden on the employer when they're going to take some kind of a personnel action or, you know, promotion action or reassignment action or whatever. It's not based on, you know, that attribute, your sexual preference, your sexual identity, your race, your gender, those sorts of things. That becomes a real challenge, having managed manpower for the Army. I mean, we had, I think, about 300,000 civilians and obviously about a million uniform personnel. You add these things on top of each other, it becomes very difficult to manage a force, to build the skills necessary to win wars. And frankly, it starts creating problems you probably didn't intend. You know, if you're a small business or you're doing business with the federal government and these are protected classes and you don't have them in your workforce or not enough to satisfy the federal government, it can become a contracting problem. It can become, you know, a litigation basis. And, of course, if you're protected, you know, and the employer is looking at you and they got two people that are identical in any important way, except one's going to be more difficult to fire if it doesn't work out, you know, frankly, I think you're going to worry a little bit about hiring that individual. And so it kind of works against them. Being protected can become a barrier to actually getting a job, as opposed to, you know, making sure that these folks that are very worried about equity, you know, get equitable treatment. I think, you know, it creates a whole lot of trouble and barriers to entry while also making it very difficult to manage the military.
Yeah, I mean, it's just my first thought when you're talking about this is, do we really want this stuff in our military? I mean, they're obviously pushing this kind of thing in other places in the government, places in the private sector, in our culture in general. But it seems like it's especially dangerous if we really get this stuff into the military. It undermines what the military is, right?
Cohesion. Yeah. I mean, it runs right against building a cohesive force with, you know, on meritocracy, that bullets fly the same speed for everybody. And, you know, you would like the very best people run the military because it's a matter of life and death of people on the battlefield. And if things go badly on the battlefield, the life and death of freedom. And so there, you know, it's a pure meritocracy. You want the very, very best people running, you know, whatever it is, Signal Corps or tanks or artillery or leading big formations, and you want them surrounded by the best people.
Now, when you were working under Trump in the Department of the Army, were you already seeing them trying to push this stuff in the military?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first things I saw when I got to the Pentagon were coming out of Congress. You had it coming from Gillibrand in New York and Jackie Speier, who was on the House side, pushing transgender pretty hard. And the presumption was against Department of Defense, from where we sat, in that there was sort of a push to find somewhere transgender would fit. Or the courts would say, well, military, you know, you're not making a good faith effort because you haven't found anywhere transgenders would work out, and therefore you're just not playing ball with us here, and we're going to litigate from the bench that you're going to take them, and they're going to fit in the military the way we see it and not necessarily the way you see it. And so anytime we looked at transgender issues, it was sort of this presumption that, you know, we had to figure out some way for it to work or we're going to lose this thing in the courts. Hmm. And it just didn't fit many ways. I mean, it's a huge burden medically, and not necessarily in, you know, huge expenditures because there just aren't many people, but it becomes a huge management burden on a company commander and the first sergeant and the people down at the actual unit level that have to make these accommodations and, you know, backfill people that are off getting treatments and make sure medical care is provided. You know, that's a lot for a young person who's like a captain, who's somebody who's probably 25. They got 100, 150 soldiers. You're trying to make sure they're all getting what they need and they're being led well and they're being trained. And into that, you throw transgender. That's a lot. And it undermines the ability of us to retain strong commanders because they came to fight and win the nation's wars, not to solve, you know, these odd sort of social problems that the military gets called on to, you know, experiment with.
And you're exactly right in calling it what it is. It's a social experiment. They see it as, well, we can do this as a social experiment. The military's under government control, so we're going to push this stuff. And I'm like, this is the last place we should be doing this. Now, I'm speaking with Casey Wardinsky, former assistant secretary to the in the Army and also running for Congress. I'm almost afraid to ask this, but is there anything else in the bill that you have a problem with?
Well, you know, Space Command is obviously a very important topic to Alabama and northern Alabama, Huntsville area. And this bill specifically says no monies will be expended to begin construction of an installation for Space Command until such time that the Department of Defense, Inspector General, and the Comptroller General of the United States complete a selection review and determine that politics wasn't involved in the decision to move Space Command here from Colorado. Well, the decision made in Washington, you can be guaranteed politics were involved. That's all they do there. So this is not good news. This will delay any decision. And I think it's bad for national security because the best place for Space Force, Space Command, these sorts of things is Huntsville, Alabama. The United States would not have created Space Force and this Space Command if the issues were being taken care of within the Air Force. But they weren't. They were not well-resourced, they were not prioritized, and space is too doggone important not to take care of. And you can read almost every week now about where Department of Defense is saying the Chinese are ahead of us in space. Well, how the heck did that happen? And we cannot afford to lose the war in space because we're global. If we're going to have forces defending Taiwan, the only way to communicate with them is satellites. And the reconnaissance they're going to need to avoid, you know, engaging our battle groups is satellite reconnaissance. We can't afford for that to get knocked out by the Chinese or anybody. And so we got to have the best people working it with the right resources, making the best arguments they can. And with Space Command buried up in Colorado, that's Air Force land. And they're going to be buried in the Air Force culture, which is a good culture for flying planes, but not a great one apparently for space. Or we wouldn't have created Space Command. And so Huntsville is Space City. It's neutral ground defense-wise because, you know, The Army and Navy would probably prefer it be out from underneath the Air Force up there in Colorado and that their interests would be addressed. And so it fits very well with the workforce, fits very well with the NASA, Space and Missile Defense Commands here, Missile Defense Agencies here, All those things would be in the Space Command rubric and much better addressed in Huntsville than in an area that's very focused on, like, terrestrial aviation.
Well, I told you I was afraid to ask, and man, that is not good news. I did not know that that was a part of this bill, so I'm really glad you brought that up. I have been worried since the beginning of this, especially when Biden got in office and the media was pushing it, that they were going to find every way to prevent Space Command from coming to Huntsville. And This just seems like another step in that direction. You know, I ask people and they're like, no, it's coming here. You're being too pessimistic. But when I hear that's in this bill, some kind of review process to make sure, politics wasn't involved. Now, maybe that's just to placate Colorado and some of these other states. But, I mean, they don't like Alabama. Biden doesn't like Alabama. I'm sure he'd be perfectly happy moving it to a more purple state for political reasons. So, wow, I'm very concerned about that.
Yeah, it's buried in there. It's only 1, 2, 3, 4, about 6 lines in a bill that's like over 1,000 pages. So it's, you got to go looking for it. But it's in there, section 1038.
Oh my gosh!
And that's not a good news story for national security or for Northern Alabama.
I'm going to make it a mission now next week to really highlight that on my show and other shows, because that's important. That's something that, especially for this area. Oh my gosh. I'm talking with Casey Wardinsky. Casey, can you stay with me through the break?
Sure.
All right, because when we get back, I want to talk to him about the situation in Ukraine. He mentioned China, how it was behind China when it comes to some new missile technology, and China's catching up to us in space and so forth. A lot to talk about. He's the man to talk about it with. You're listening to Right Side Radio. This is Yaffe filling in for Phil Williams. We'll be back in just a moment. Newstalk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. This is Yaffe filling in for Phil Williams today. Of course, you can always catch Right Side Radio with Phil Williams 2 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday right here on WVNN. Joining me on the phone right now, continuing the conversation with Casey Wardinsky. He is the former Assistant Secretary to the Army. He was at under President Trump, and he's also running for Congress here. He's running for Mo Brooks' seat because Mo Brooks is running for the Senate. Casey, I wanted to, we were talking a little bit about, you know, the military, but you had mentioned something I find interesting. You had mentioned how China, a lot of people are worried that China is catching up to us when it comes to space technology. And I know I have seen articles about how their hypersonic missile technology is ahead of us. How concerned are you about that?
Well, it's not a good development. I would imagine we're still ahead in these two areas. But they're closing very rapidly. They're putting in a lot of they're greatly expanding their nuclear forces. They had about 100 or so ICBMs that could reach the United States. It was enough to provide them a counterpunch if they were ever attacked. But now they're growing their nuclear forces to compete with ours. The fleet in the Pacific obviously depends heavily on space assets, satellites for reconnaissance and communications. If they can take those satellites out of play, either with kinetic or electronic warfare, that would be a real problem for the Pacific Fleet and the Air Forces in the Pacific. And they know that, and so they're spending a lot of money to gain these capabilities, and they, frankly, stole a lot of it from us. They have a huge presence in our colleges and universities. They have done a lot of work on buying over the loyalties of people working in our colleges and universities. And they've stolen a lot of our technology. I think Huntsville is probably the second counterintelligence target, you know, when it comes to this matter in the United States. And not all our counterintelligence assets have been properly deployed to defend, you know, these important bits of technology. And so the Chinese have exploited all that. And it's got to end. We got to maintain the presence in space. We got to strengthen it. And great things are going on at NASA and the Army here to do that. But a lot of work to be done.
So there's also the situation with Russia. So we're worried about China. How worried are you about Russia right now? I mean, do you think they are possibly going to invade Ukraine?
Well, I would say, it's a possibility. It's a real mess. And it's a mess that Mr. Biden has really contributed to. We had that nonsense of Russiagate when President Trump was in office. I think Trump would have worked to make sure China and Russia never aligned against the United States. Instead, the Democrats, with their just bogus claims of Russiagate and, Russian influence over President Trump, made it very difficult to have discussions with the Russians, to pursue a fruitful security policy vis-a-vis the Russians. And they've kind of been forced into the Chinese arms. And along with that now, of course, President Trump was a strong advocate of energy independence, of preventing this pipeline from being completed that would carry Russian gas into Western Europe. Russia makes probably about 60-70% of their hard currency by exporting energy. And we were able to stop that when President Trump was there, and Biden lifted the sanctions. And so that pipeline is going through. And then Biden made it very tough for American energy producers to pursue development of energy here. So now we're an energy importer again. He's begging the Middle Eastern countries to increase output. And all that contributes to higher energy costs, which higher energy costs benefits Russia because their main export is energy. And so they've now got more money to engage in, these kind of nefarious activities in their near abroad, the old former Soviet states, whether it's Kazakhstan or Georgia or Ukraine. And they've got money to buy their own weapons, which they did not have before. They make good weapons, but they couldn't afford their own. And so now all that's in place, and it's made a heck of a problem that should not exist, and it's Biden's doing.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But, I mean, from what I've heard, though, Biden really doesn't want to invade Ukraine. Maybe this is just about putting pressure on them so they don't join NATO and NATO stays out of the way. Or maybe Ukraine will just give up some territory to Russia. I mean, you think? What do you think about that?
Well, Ukraine already gave up some territory to Russia the last time we had a Democrat in the White House.
Yeah, that's true.
They moved into the Crimea, which is where the Black Sea's fleet is quartered. And they used kind of what they call a hybrid warfare, ununiformed personnel appearing inside, the Crimea. And you couldn't figure out whose army they were, unless you had a brain in your head. Then you could figure out they were Russians. And they gained control of the country without firing a shot. And now they've done it in the Donbass part of the Ukraine. And I think they're going to try to do that kind of thing again. It'll be this sort of surreptitious civil unrest, civil authority kind of problem inside the Ukraine at first. And they'll destabilize parts of the Ukraine. And then maybe they'll say, hey, we got to bring in the Russian forces to bring stability and quell the unrest and grab another piece of it. But the idea that we would go to war over the Ukraine, it's another one of these neocon or Democrat kind of adventures. We don't need any more wars. We've been at war for a long time. They haven't gone well. Our vital interests are not involved.
Casey,
NATO, at the end of this Russian Empire or Soviet state, we were talking about never going east of Poland.
Casey, unfortunately, we're just out of time. Really appreciate you coming on, Casey. Sorry about that. We'll be back in a moment here on Right Side Radio. Thanks to Casey Wardinsky. Find out more about him at friendsofkc.com.